Okay, good evening everybody, and welcome to today's teleseminar called Radical Awakening. My name is Damien Sen, and it's a great pleasure having you on the line. In a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, Amoda Ma Javan. But before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work today, particularly if this is your first PeopleYouShouldMeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking Amoda a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted in through our site by you, our listeners. Now, I first heard about Amoda's work through a very close friend of mine, Steve Noble, who has also been a regular guest on the People You Should Meet program. And Steve was very moved by Amoda's work and introduced me to her work, and I had a very, very similar experience. And I delved deeper and listened to lots of the different recordings that Amoda has on her website and just knew that she'd be an absolutely perfect fit for People You Should Meet program. Now, the topic we're actually exploring today is also a topic that's very dear to my heart. Like, we're in a very expansive and awakening period here on planet Earth, and I guess the People You Should Meet program very much embodies that new awakening energy. So it's going to be very exciting to explore that and the way Amoda sees that awakening consciousness as well. Now, Amoda Ma Javan is an author, an international speaker, and a global spiritual messenger. She's been listed as one of today's living spiritual visionaries, a modern mystic and a master of heart-based living. Her book, How to Find God in Everything, was rated in 2008 as the third most life-changing new book and has been described as one of the best metaphysical books in recent times. So with that, it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the call our very special guest, Amoda Ma Javan. How are you doing there, Amoda?
Hi, Damien. I'm really, really honoured to be on your show.
Welcome. Great. Well, I just thought I'd start you from the top, Amoda. Like, as I mentioned in the intro, this whole awakening consciousness does seem to be infusing planet Earth. And I was just wondering if you could actually share for listeners at home, like, how you perceive this awakening and what impact is it actually having on planet Earth?
Yeah, well, I think we're all feeling it in different ways, and you know, some of us are feeling it as a sense of excitement. Some of us are feeling it as a sense of fear, and probably a mixture of those things. So it's impacting us in many different ways. It's impacting us on personal levels, on mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual levels. Maybe creating more chaos, more confusion, a yearning for awakening, and yet the challenges of day-to-day life are becoming increasing. Certainly the speed of life is challenging, increasingly challenging. Some of the breaking down of structures on a global level, the environment, the economy, can be very frightening, very threatening to our stability. So all these things are happening at the same time, and yet there's this sort of sense of coming together for something that's about to happen. Now, this is what I call the new frequency of the divine feminine. It's a new evolutionary impulse that is coming down to Earth, coming through humanity, to move us into a higher frequency, to move us into a new paradigm, and to radically change our relationship to life. So it's really creating or calling us to make fundamental changes to our beliefs, because our beliefs create the world, or, you know, the world is a reflection of our inner beliefs. And It's calling us to make changes in how we think, in how we feel, in what we say, and what we do. So it's a very fundamental shift. And I call it the divine feminine. Let me backtrack a bit because I just mentioned that. Because the divine feminine is the frequency of oneness. Now, many people perhaps think that the frequency of oneness or the divine feminine should be very soft and gentle and calling us into this state of oneness, which should be very easy and flowing, but actually it's not. The divine feminine is a fierce kind of feminine. It's a fierce love. It's the love of a mother. It's unconditional, and it's the kind of love that has the ferocity and the tenacity to leave no stone unturned. So what it's doing is it's kind of bringing to the surface, bringing to light everywhere that we have lived in separation. So it leaves no stone unturned. It leaves no lie unrevealed. It leaves no separation not reunited. But the thing is that the journey of that reunion can be painful and can be challenging and can be, we can have resistance to it because we think it shouldn't be that way. What it's ultimately doing is calling us to, on a personal level, shift or change our fundamental relationship to life, which means our fundamental relationship to ourselves. And on a perhaps more global level, but also on a personal level, it's the healing of the wound of separation or the split between heaven and earth. In other words, it's the healing of the split between our intuition and our intellect, between the masculine and feminine polarities, both within and without. It's a healing of the split between heart and mind. It's the healing of the split between science and religion. It's the healing of the split between spirituality and practicality, the transcendent and the mundane. And it's the healing of the split, perhaps more to the point, between the inner and the outer. So it's the relationship between our inner world and the outer world that is really coming to light. And that's why it's calling us to look very clearly at our beliefs. So to summarize that, it's a fundamental shift. What it's calling us to do, and this is what I call a radical awakening, it's an awakening on all levels of being, is to shift from being in victim consciousness to being in conscious co-creation. In other words, to shift from our smallness to our greatness in every aspect of our lives, and we'll explore that, how that manifests, I think, in our day-to-day lives, because that's the question really. Well, okay, what does this mean in our day-to-day lives? But that's what I call a radical awakening.
Amazing. There's so many threads I want to actually pick up on there, Imoda, because you've shared so many amazing chunks of information. But before I actually delve a little deeper into some of the things that have sparked my curiosity, I first wanted to actually ask you about your own awakening process. Was it a rapid awakening, or was it something that you were lucky to have since birth? What's been your process?
Oh, to have had it from birth. No, I've actually lived a life of suffering most of the time. It's both slow and immediate is the answer to that. Slow because I guess the first real awakening, or the first level of awakening, happened in 1989 when I was 28. And that was really the awakening from being totally locked in my ego and my mind and my head, where my identity and my perception of the world was totally through the eyes of my ego, or my identification with self, and really unaware of the hidden inner world. Perhaps not, because as a child I was very mystical, but by the time I was in my mid-20s, I'd lost that sort of capacity. So I became very much in my head. I was very much an academic, striving for excellence in the academic world. And the shift was rapid, because my life got turned around very quickly. It got turned upside down very quickly, and you know, all my outer structures fell away, my relationship, my academic vocation, my house, my possessions. So I actually became destitute for a while, whilst I realized that actually who I was, or who I thought I was, who I was identified with, was not who I really was. So I went on a journey, and that journey was a long journey over a period of time, a number of years, which necessitated a lot of healing, a lot of personal work, inner work, a lot of exploration of my past and the conditions I had experienced as a young child, and a very sort of feminine part of myself, you know, the emotional part. And that took a very long time. And in the process, I did every workshop under the sun and read every book under the sun and really explored all sorts of cosmic and, you know, all sorts of, you know, therapeutic modalities. That then stabilized, and I found myself able to then give something back to the world in the form of a particular method that I developed to help other people go through a cathartic, transformative experience to awaken their hearts and bring them into a place of wholeness. And I ran a, you know, personal transformation business, workshops, classes, retreats. But there was something missing. And that came in 2002, where the final, maybe it's not the final, but certainly a piece of the jigsaw slotted into place. And that was just rapid. That was in a moment that happened. And that's when I was given the two golden keys, which I'd like to talk about shortly. And that totally turned my life around. that was the radical awakening. That was, the first one was an exploration, really a self-discovery, but this was the radical awakening that really changed my relationship to my core self and to my life and to every aspect of it, and really shifted me from any whisper or thread of victim consciousness to being a conscious co-creator. And that's when everything sort of slotted into place, and I now share this teaching.
Wow. That when you mentioned your journey began at age 28, it seems quite a pivotal age for many people on the spiritual path, with Saturn returns. And have you actually come across lots of people? Because I know for me personally, I actually had a near-death car crash at age 28, and I know lots of other spiritual teachers have had these events occur at or around that age. And has it also been your experience, Amoda, with people that you've worked with?
Yes, I mean, I feel that it's certainly one of the first major transitions in life, 28, and it's the shift from being, well, like I described for myself, identified with a particular aspect of ourselves, usually that part of ourselves, not usually, but that part of ourselves that has been conditioned by our upbringing, by our parents, by our schooling, by our environment, and that's who we think we are, and we very solidly think that's who we are because we know nothing else. As we're growing up, and then something happens, usually from the external, like for you, you know, the car crash. For me, it was an internal thing, but it manifested externally with everything falling away. And very often it's that that is the catalyst for that questioning of self. Who am I really? And it's also a stage in growing up, in maturing and you know, sort of opening our eyes really to the bigger picture. And then there are more. You know, there are more transitions later at 42 and other ages.
And in 2002, you mentioned that you received two golden keys, and I was just wondering if you could actually share what those keys are and how they actually practically apply to everyday life.
Okay. Well, let me just say that the two golden keys were revealed to me in a transmission. I asked a question because I sort of reached a low point in one aspect of my life, and I asked the question, what is the meaning of my life? And I didn't really mean, you know, what is the purpose of my life? I didn't really mean, it was a very existential question. And I was given this transmission, and the transmission was actually both for my own growth, but also for, it was a collective vision, and that was very clear. And the actual description of the vision, because it's quite detailed and it's very pertinent. Every detail of it, every aspect of it, is an important part of the teaching, if you like, or of the message. And I describe that in full in my book, How Divine God in Everything. So I won't go into it in great detail here. But the two most important points in it were the two golden keys, which are the keys to creating that radical shift from ego to heart, from small-minded, myopic ego to the clarity and vastness of an unbounded heart. So in other words, the shift from being a victim to being a conscious co-creator, from being small to living from our greatness, from living in suffering to living in liberation. And they're inner keys because they're inner actions that we can take, or that we must take, because life calls us to take them. And their presence, the first one is called presence, which is a masculine quality. It's the sword of awareness, and it's the ability to bring ourselves into the now. It's the ability to anchor ourselves in the present. And when we do this, then we respond to life in the now rather than reacting from the past. And so what this means is that we become a master of our minds, rather than allowing our mind to become our master. And so this has a masculine quality, if you like. And the other one is openness, which is the bowl of love. So this has a feminine quality. And this is the action of active surrender, which I've got to say is very different to going with the flow. Very often it gets confused. It's again about the feminine. It's not a gentle feminine. It is gentle, but it's also very active. So it's what I call active surrender, and that's the ability to open wide to receive the fullness of this moment. And that's an action. We have to activate our will to make that happen. And so it's saying yes to this moment and each moment as it unfolds in our experience. It's being grateful for this moment because every experience is a gift, even within the challenge that it brings, even if it's painful, even if it's challenging, there is always a gift in that. But we can only receive that gift when we actually actively surrender and open to receive the fullness of that moment. So these two golden keys, what in essence they're saying is totality. When we bring our totality into the experience of life, because we get from life what we give to life. And so when we bring the full luminosity of our presence and the full glory of our openness or love to this moment as it is revealed to us in every moment, then something amazing happens. There is an alignment of our inner power with the power of the universe. And so that's the awakening, that's the radical awakening, that's the shift that happens. There's a recognition, a shift from being a victim to recognizing our own inner divinity. It's like a muscle, you see. It's like a muscle that we have to apply because it's like God's power or universal power or spiritual power or the power of creation is always, always available. But it cannot act. God cannot act. Spirit cannot act. The universe cannot act. Creation cannot act without us. We have to activate it. And that's where the activation of will comes in, and especially in the face of challenge. Because that's when we want to turn away.
Well, there's so many amazing things that you've just shared there, but one thing I did want to pick up on was this whole concept of surrender. I think quite often it's a very misunderstood term, and rather than being a term of weakness, this whole concept of active surrender is really a very, very powerful position and a standing in life. And I just love the way you described the process of actively surrendering and really being totally available to life and open to life. Great.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I can give a tiny little example. It's not tiny. It was actually the major turning point in my life, but just a brief example. I'll explain it briefly. When I was 28, but when I was 42. I'd been in a 10-year relationship. It was very intense. It was very passionate. It was I thought he was my soulmate, and there was a lot of growth and learning in that relationship. There was also a lot of suffering in that relationship. And when that finally crashed, and I don't know about you, Damien, but as you get older, you feel you have more to lose. Well, that's how I've experienced it. Certainly not anymore. But at the time, you know, it's like, well, this was it. This was my final relationship. I was in my 40s. We'd been together, and there was a lot of attachment and this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. And when that finally crashed, the pain of abandonment was so intense. It was so all-encompassing, and even though I carried on my daily life as normal, inside I was shattered, obliterated, lost, totally abandoned, and that abandonment went very deep, and the pain was too much to allow myself to really feel and to really be with. So there'd be little distractions, you know, reading books when I'm at home, picking up the phone, calling to people, all the things that we do when we are not truly facing that which is arising from within, the pain arising from within. And it just got unbearable, and I finally turned around and faced it. And I faced it through these two golden keys by being absolutely present with it. Instead of turning away from it and distracting myself, I just brought myself here into this moment. And in this moment, it was agony. And then that's where the active surrender came in, because my whole being wanted to shut down. It wanted to control this feeling and just put it to the side and say, oh, well, this is just, you know, something that isn't really me, that isn't really going on. It's just, it'll go away, it'll pass. But actually, the active surrender was to energetically open to it. Mm. And that is a huge overcoming of an internal inertia, because everything in me wants to turn away. And that active surrender is like a softening. It's a real, just softening around the edges of consciousness is how I describe it. And in that, it's like falling into an abyss, because you're swallowed up by this mass of, it's like falling into a void. You don't know where it's going to go. And that's where the transformation happens. If you allow yourself to go deeply into that without holding on to anything, without turning away, without knowing what you're falling into, there is an amazing light that comes at the end of the tunnel.
Actually talking about this in a conversation this morning, the whole notion of actually tensing the body so we can actually go deeper into relaxation. But also just wanted to pick up on the metaphors that are occurring on a personal level, but also on a much grander scale as well. Like you mentioned in the early parts of the call, this whole breaking down of structures that we're witnessing in the world, things that aren't serving the unity consciousness of humanity, but also bringing that down to the level of the person as well, and just seeing structures in our own personal lives are breaking down in order to bring through new levels of awareness and new levels of consciousness. But it was just nice to see the parallels, and I guess most people are experiencing these deconstructions of life in one way or another. And that actually just reminded me of one of my favourite quotes from Picasso, that every act of creation is necessarily an act of destruction. So what we're seeing in the world is a lot of deconstruction of existing paradigms and openings of new possibility.
Absolutely. There always needs to be a death before a rebirth, and there's always darkness before the light of dawn. Mm. And it's the same on a personal level, on our spiritual growth journey, and it's the same on a global level as globally we are having a spiritual awakening. And I'd like to just offer out that embrace this. Mm. We need to embrace this. It's good. It's good. It hurts, but it's good. It's always a gift, you know, if we allow that, if we accept it, if we are grateful for it and open to it.
Mm. And I just love the whole concept of presence that you shared as well, Amoda, and how turning towards what we don't want to see rather than turning away, which for most of us is our natural predisposition. And just through witnessing as well, some beautiful things can actually reveal themselves, where if we're turned away, it's absolutely impossible for that awareness to come through.
Mm, absolutely.
Excellent. Now, I was just wondering, Emoto, for people who are feeling that challenge in their own lives, whether on that macro level or down to their personal live level, I was just wondering if you had any just practical guidance on how people can actually navigate that challenging terrain.
Well, I don't know how it is practical, because you see, so very often we think it's something that we need to do on an external level. It's something that we need to fix in our lives. And if you really want to radically awaken, if you really want to liberate yourself from suffering, it's an internal change. The internal change has to come first. And that's what I call becoming an active agent of change. An active agent of change is someone who has the courage to examine his or her own self-limiting beliefs, who has the courage and the commitment to look at the results in our lives, to see how these are a product of our thoughts and our feelings, and has the tenacity to change how he or she responds to life. In other words, to take 100% responsibility for your life and to recognize that everything in your life is there for your growth and highest good, even if it's challenging and painful. I keep coming back to that. Because ultimately, it's the inner shift. That's the practical thing that needs to happen, the application of the two keys. Because in every moment, there is an opportunity to liberate oneself from suffering. And I get this question so much. It's like, well, what can I do about it? It's not a doing, it's a being. Mm. It's activating your will to actively surrender and to bring your totality into the anchor of this moment. I guess you can say that is a doing, but it's a doing that arises out of being.
Mm.
And then everything falls into place, because then right action happens.
Mm.
You know, the right action arises out of the right. You know, right doing arises out of right being.
Mm. Excellent, I love that. Right doing emerges out of right being.
Yeah, and the things that we can do along the way, if you like, you know, is to notice where our storylines are. You know, it requires awareness. You know, awareness is to notice and to be honest with oneself about where one's storylines are. So if one is responding or reacting to life from our storylines, there's always an element of judgment, blame, attack, defense, or poor me in that.
Mm.
And that's when we know that we are coming from victim consciousness.
Mm.
Yeah, and so then we can choose. We have a choice to change how we respond.
Mm. Absolutely. Cool. Well, Emoto, earlier on I mentioned that we had questions come in from all around the world, so just thought I'd ask you some of those questions now. And the first one I wanted to ask was from Christine, who is in the United Kingdom. And Christine asks, I have found at times the constant state of challenge and change is very debilitating, as indeed have others I've spoken to. How close do you think we are to the whole of mankind reaching that final place of awakening? Could it be in our lifetime?
Okay, there's sort of two questions in one there. So what I want to say about constant challenge and change is that it doesn't need to be debilitating if we approach it with an attitude of gratitude. Because again, this brings us back to the same point, which is that everything serves our growth. It just depends on our perspective as to whether it depletes us or nourishes that. And I can say that from personal experience, because I used to complain about life all the time. I used to feel a victim of life all the time, or much of the time, and that's because I wasn't living in gratitude. I was living in a place of smallness in which I was trying to get from life as much as I could to make myself feel better about myself.
Mm.
And when I changed that and actually saw everything that was revealed to me through life, everything that was being given to me by life as a gift for my growth, as serving my growth, that actually the challenges became not depleting, not something that hurt me and made me smaller, but actually they nourished me and made me bigger. So this is the shift. And so when we can do that, that brings us into the present, and it brings us into openness, and it brings us into totality, and then you find yourself surfing in the eternal unfolding of now. And then there is no real division between what's difficult and what's easy. It all becomes joyful. It all becomes exciting because there is a growth that happens from it. And as to how close are we to reaching the final place of awakening, well, I don't really know what the final place of awakening is. All I know is that one person at a time is how we change the world. We change the world by changing ourselves. And this could be in your lifetime, you reach the place of awakening. And that awakening isn't a final resting place to me. That awakening is where the journey starts, because it's then what do we do with that? You know, and we don't know how different the world will be. We can predict and we can imagine, but we don't really know how different the world would be if each individual was truly awakened. But what matters is that, because time and space are ultimately eternal, what matters is that we play our part, and we play our part by taking full responsibility of our for our lives now, and doing everything that we can to overcome our own self-limiting negative beliefs, and to open our hearts to gratitude and to the gift of life now.
Excellent. Look, I love that, these arrival points actually being the beginnings of journeys, like the whole notion of every exit is an entry to somewhere else. And just one of my favorite sort of philosophies is, we'd say, like a martial arts philosophy, where it's almost like people have that striving to become a black belt, for example, and then literally there's a mantra in karate that, like, when you have the black belt, you can actually commence your training. So, like, I just love that the whole notion that your journey starts when you can come fully into that unit consciousness or oneness consciousness, and then use that as a real gift to your own life and also to humanity as well.
Absolutely.
Beautiful. Okay, this question actually comes from Barbara in the United States, and Barbara asks, how does one deal with the deep unconsciousness still present in the world without getting sucked down into a lower vibration and the helplessness, frustration and anger that accompany it?
If you are feeling sucked down by helplessness, frustration and anger in the world, then the question to ask is, where in yourself are you feeling helpless, frustrated and angry? Because the outer world is always a reflection of the inner world. And the unconsciousness that we see in the world is a reflection of our own unconsciousness. So really, to look inside and do the inner work. The most important and helpful thing that you can do in order to deal with the unconsciousness of the world is to actually become conscious yourself, to become radiant, to become overflowing with love, to become passionate about what you do, to serve others, to add value to others. And then your experience of the world will change, because it's not up to you to change the world, it's up to you to change yourself.
Beautiful. Okay, this one comes from Yuzian in France. Yuzian asks, staying in higher frequencies is no easy task, and the mundane life sometimes takes its toll, and then bang, I back one step lower with all the aches and all the pains that go with it. Is there a trick or a method to stay in alignment no matter what comes up and to remain centered?
Well, ultimately, it's not about staying at a higher frequency, because that thought itself separates us from what is. Because the new frequency is about the marriage of heaven and earth. It's about the marriage of the transcendent and the mundane. This is a new paradigm. It's like the old way is gone, the old way of spiritual enlightenment by going to the highest mountaintop to dwell in the highest frequencies is over. This is a new paradigm that we may not have seen before. And it's about the marriage of spirituality. It's about, and practicality. It's about the bringing spirituality into the marketplace. And so just asking that question will create a separation. The trick or the method is to always be anchored in presence and openness and to allow the mundane life, the everyday life, to be your doorway, because that's where the awakening happens. My awakening happened right in the middle of London, one of the biggest, busiest parts of London. I had, you know, one bedroom flat there. I lived the London life to some degree, and you know, that was not something that prevented me from radically awakening to the truth of who I am, my God nature. And so to also remember that it's about falling off and getting back on. So if one feels that one's taken a step backwards or sideways, or the pain is there, and then, you know, there's a backwards and forwards feeling or a sideways feeling, but it doesn't matter whether you fall off and get back on, because the mark of a master is not whether he falls off, but how quickly he gets back on. That's really the art of meditation. It's not about staying in a particular frequency. It's about noticing when you've fallen off the path of presence and openness and then stepping back on again. So the doorway really is in the mundane. It's in the everyday reality. And this is what I call in my book, the 7 gateways to God, which sounds very mystical, but it's not. It is and it isn't. It's actually mundane. It's about using the everyday reality of our relationship to every aspect of our lives to allow that to be a doorway into the experience of our innate divinity. And I'd just like to mention 3 main areas that are particularly pertinent here, or particular doorways that are really happening in the world now, and that's health, love, and wealth, or health, relationships, and wealth, which includes our work. And they're very earthy aspects of life. And the divine feminine is an earthy spirituality. That's why it's a practical spirituality. And it's in these 3 areas of our lives, which traditionally have been areas of that we turn our backs on when we embark on a spiritual path. But the new spirituality is about enlightenment within health. In other words, wellness, true radiance. It's about enlightenment within our everyday relationships, and it's about enlightenment in relationship to our wealth and our work. So it's a real shift away from just staying in the higher frequencies to actually bringing the higher and the lower together, which actually creates a whole new world.
Mm. Now, do you have any stories, Amoda, of the, I guess, people sort of navigating those 3 areas? With presence and openness.
Well, let's take one as an example. Again, we could talk for hours about this, but let's see which one would be a good example. Let's look at relationship. We can be victims of our relationships, in which case we live in we have a codependent relationship, and that's when we're looking for love or approval from outside of ourselves. And that means we're not really present in our relationship, because we are caught up in our expectations. We're caught up in our storylines of how relationships should be, the romantic myth. We're caught up in our storylines of security and comfort, which means that we are not bringing our full totality, our honesty, authenticity, our courage, and our vulnerability into the relationship. And the shift is from being a victim of our relationship by needing love and approval from outside of ourselves, to having a primary relationship with ourselves, in other words, falling in love with our aloneness, and the only way to fall in love with your aloneness is to be absolutely present and absolutely open to the deepest core of yourself when you are truly alone. And that's, you know, alone in the moment, which we are alone in the moment when we dive into that moment. And that shifts us into all oneness, into the discovery of all, our all oneness, which makes us whole. And when we bring that wholeness into relationships, then we are love. We're not looking for love. We are love. And that creates an interdependent relationship. And it's when a relationship, two people come from wholeness into interdependency, that the alchemy of true love can really happen. That's where love grows. Otherwise, love is dying.
It's quite interesting. Like, so much of the spiritual path seems very paradoxical in nature. And like, who would have known that the doorway to oneness actually comes from delving in or falling into falling in love with being totally alone? It's quite amazing.
Amazing, yes. It's full of paradoxes.
Great. Okay, this is a question from Val in South Africa, and Val asks, how is attracting opportunities, experiences, and fulfilling one's desires congruent with the spiritual philosophy of letting go, and letting go of all desires and sense of individual personality?
I love this question. This is a great question, because this is one that encapsulates the paradox. The very question itself is the paradox. So I'll attempt to answer that. It's the letting go that is being referred to here as the spiritual philosophy. The letting go is the letting go of the identification with a conditioned self. It's the letting go of the victim consciousness, which has been created by our identification to our beliefs, to our storylines, and to our self-limiting thoughts. And when we let go of this, that we are not, but it's who we think we are, then our true nature is revealed. And our true nature is radiant, is joyful, is happy, is peaceful, is abundant, and is compassionate. And from that place, there is right action. And right action is what aligns our personal will with divine will. So in other words, right action becomes, or that alignment attracts the opportunities, the experiences, and the fulfillment of one's highest dreams to create our divine destiny. And our divine destiny, although it may have a different shape and flavor for each person, is always one of service. So ultimately, they come full circle. It's like if we're coming from our ego, or our, what's being referred to here as our individual personality, our small self, our conditioned self, if our action is arising from that place, then it's always self-serving. It's what can I get for myself? How can I protect myself? How can I get as much as I can for myself? How can I get love, power, money, status, security from outside of myself? But if we come from our true nature, which only happens when we've let go of our conditioned self, then that love, that power, that abundance, that security and stability come from within. They are divine gifts that align us to our divine destiny. And then the world offers us or reveals to us the opportunities that allow us to give that back to the world even more.
It's quite interesting. Again, another paradox, that our stability emerges out of letting go of the stability of our conditioned self, or the stability that seemingly offers, and letting go of that and actually allowing the true stability of our divine nature to emerge.
Because when we haven't let go of our conditioned self, we don't actually know what's left behind when we do let go of it. So we imagine, oh, well, if I let go of all this, then that means I'm just going to be nothing, or I'm just going to be I won't want anything, or I won't do anything, or that's our idea very often of the enlightened state. Mm. But that's not really how it is. And I also reiterate that the old way of turning our backs on the material world, of retreating into a cave, is over. The enlightenment is not just a spiritual enlightenment, but it's also a mental, emotional, and physical enlightenment. So it's about bringing our enlightenment into the real world, which means that we do, we act, we serve, we fulfill our highest dreams.
Mm.
And that's how the world changes.
Mm. I love the whole notion of service as well. It's something that's certainly very dear to my heart, and it is something that we're seeing a lot more of in the world, where people are actually doing phenomenal things to actually serve their fellow human being. And actually through that process actually being nourished in a way that they've never been nourished before.
Totally. Service is, again, one of the most, it can be an understood term when it comes, when one hasn't actually, isn't coming from one's true radiant self. It feels like something good that we do for the world, but it's not. It's a natural arising of our true nature, because we have to share it with the world. Mm. And that's what's definitely shifting in today's world, is that there are more and more people realizing the true beauty and fulfillment of service when it comes from the right place. But you've got to do the inner work before the outer work happens.
Mm. Excellent. Now, this this question comes from John, who is in the UK, and John asks, how do I overcome blocks that are so suppressed that I'm not actually consciously aware of them?
Well, that's an interesting question as well, because that's also full of paradoxes. Well, if you're not aware of them, then how do you know that they're there? Why do you want to overcome them if you're not aware that they're there? No, let me stop being facile. But the bottom line is this. To get conscious of your blocks, just take a look at your life. Because the outer is always a reflection of the inner. There's no separation. You know, the results that you have in your life are a mirror or a reflection or a product of what your innermost thoughts, feelings, and beliefs are. So if you just look at your life and see where it's working for you and where it isn't, in other words, is there somewhere in your life that you are experiencing frustration, anger, depression, stagnation, boredom, confusion, low energy, stuckness? I could go on. Or are you living a truly radiant life of passion and joy and fulfillment? Are you calling into your life people and situations that uplift you? Are you serving others? Are you contributing to the world? Are you adding value to someone else's life? And if the answer is no to any of those, then there's something that rises to awareness. You become aware then of why, of where you might be creating that, where you might be attracting that, where you might be calling that experience into your life. And that is the clue, that is the doorway to examine, well, why am I experiencing this? What is it in me that, what belief do I have around this? What is it in me that is creating this in my life? And that's the beginning of awareness.
Mm. And say, this awareness, does it, these clues, are they revealed in our challenges, or are they also revealed in our great joys as well?
Well, if you're experiencing great joy, then there isn't a block. If your life is truly flowering and is truly what I call radiant, where you're living at the highest level of passion for life, zest for life, every moment is juicy. Where every, you know, and even that's when it's challenging, you know, and it goes up and down because we have biorhythms and life happens and it knocks us sideways. But still there is a overriding sense of life is yummy, life is interesting, life is exciting, life is juicy, life is fulfilling, life is passionate, life is radiance, and I'm sharing that radiance with others in the world. And therefore, if I'm doing that, I'm attracting other people that resonate on that level, who add to that. Well, if that's happening, then there's nothing to overcome until something comes up that reveals that there is a block. But if there's any sense of, you know, most people live below sort of full radiance, you know, where life's just okay and you're just getting by, you know, and shit happens. Well, that's a clue. That's the first clue, because the first thing to accept is that everything that comes into your life, you have called in. Your life is a mirror of how you think and feel. And so there's no accidents. So to look at that.
Absolutely. Well, Imoda, you've certainly revealed many, many clues for everyone today on the call. And I just really wanted to thank you for the wealth of information that you've shared over the past 50 minutes. And I know that people who are tuned in to the call will want to know much more about your work and how they can actually buy your book, How to Find God in Everything, and also how to find out about more of your programs as well. And I was just wondering if you could spend a few minutes just to share with people exactly how they can deepen their journey with you.
Yeah, well, I'm very excited to be holding a talk in London on April the 23rd at a wonderful centre called Alchemy. That's an evening talk, and in that I'll be going into more depth about the two golden keys and how they were revealed to me and what it means to apply those in our lives. And then on July the 3rd, I'll be holding a one-day seminar, which will be experiential, where I will go into those three areas that we mentioned, health, love or relationship, and wealth work. And there'll be processes and all sorts of exciting things going on, so we can really create a radical awakening, or, you know, shift some energy. You can find out more about those by going to my website and by signing up to my newsletter, which I can keep you updated. So my website is www.amodamajeevan, spelled AmodaMajeevan.com. I know that's a mouthful. You can also order my book on Amazon. It's available on amazon.co.uk and .com. That's How to Find God in Everything. And don't be put off by the word God, because I'm really talking about your inner power, the truth of who you are. Not God in a theological sense. Well, that's the way to really kind of, I'd love to stay in touch. I'd love to hear from people. I'd love to stay in touch with you via my newsletter, and I have loads of free gifts to give away as well.
Great. And I was just wondering, Imoda, if you could actually share some insights into your writing process. How did the book How to Find the God in Everything come about, and what was the writing journey like for you?
Well, I've written a book before that, and it was a very different experience. The first one was written within 6 months. This one took a process of 3 years, but not so much because of the writing, because I'm actually a very experienced writer. And so the writing process comes easily, but more because of the journey of discovery that I went on with it. From the revelation that I received through the transmission of the two golden keys, which then impacted my life and turned my life around, and I had to sort of embrace that and really digest it and let it really sink in and then put it into practice. That was all part of the writing process. Then I knew that I had to share it, that I knew that I had to write about it, and then, you know, obviously getting a publisher and all that. And then it flowed. I'm hoping the next one won't take as long.
And have you already started writing the next one?
I do have something gestating. Mm-hmm. It's called Radical Awakening. There's nothing concrete yet.
Cool.
Damien, before I forget, I don't know if this is the right time, but is to offer every listener a free gift.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and for this, I'd like you to go to a different link. If you go to www.amodamj.com, so just Amoda, AMODAMJ.com, if you enter your name and email address, which won't be shared with anyone else, you will immediately receive the free gift pack. It's a virtual free gift pack. There's loads of there's some audio downloads. There's a lovely meditation created by myself and my partner, Kavi. There's a PDF download and something else quite exciting, my singing affirmations email series. So please feel free to do that.
Great. And that's amodamj.com.
Correct.
Great. Now, you mentioned Kavi there as well, Amoda. And I was just wondering if you could actually share more about your collaborations. I've heard some beautiful tracks that you've collaborated on, and we will be actually closing the show a little bit later on with one of the tracks. So I was just wondering if you could share a little more insight into your collaborative works.
Yeah, Kavi and I have been together for 8 years now, and ever since we met, in fact, before we actually embarked on an intimate relationship, we were working together, and so it's always been a working relationship in that sense, or a co-creative, collaborative relationship, him supplying music for my workshops and my meditations, and then we realized that we had a service to the world together that was bigger than each of us as individuals, and so we teach some of the work together. He provides the music for my workshops, like I said, and some of my talks, and certainly for my meditations. We've created a meditation CD based on the seven gateways in the book, and lots of other things as well. His music is beautiful. It's heart-based. It's very in the moment. It's unconventional, it's modern. So again, he brings his spirituality very much down to earth and into the marketplace. It ranges from being pretty funky and groovy and uplifting when he wants it to be, to being very, very ambient and just sort of, you know, heart orientated. So I think this is a song called Life is a Miracle. Which was actually created or inspired by one of the core principles in my book. He actually created an album called The Divine Inside, which was taking the core message in my book, the different aspects of it, and he created a song out of each one, and it's very, very beautiful, and you have to listen to it with your heart and not with your mind, because it brings you into that space.
Great. Now we will be sharing the track in just a moment, but before I do play the track, Amoda, I just wanted to ask you, are there any things that you would like to leave our listeners with tonight, just to guide and inspire their own radical awakening?
What I'd like to say is that radical awakening is both extraordinary and very ordinary. I was dwelling on this the other day, just in terms of my own experience and understanding of it. But, you know, so often we think that that spiritual awakening is kind of like we're going to sprout wings and fly. That's cosmic consciousness, and certainly it can give us, you know, the heights of a very mystical or cosmic experience. But real awakening, when we bring it into the world and into our lives, is absolutely ordinary. Life just becomes more down to earth, but at the same time, it becomes more amazing. Again, it's one of those paradoxes. Mm. So it's extraordinarily ordinary, and it's ordinarily extraordinary. And instead of escaping into the higher realms, I invite everyone to totally love what is, to totally be in love with what is, because that's where the liberation is. You know, the thing that every single human being has in common is the desire to be free. Now, some people don't do anything about it, but those that yearn for freedom and take steps towards it the key is in loving what is, not into escaping into some other reality that we think is spiritual. Our spirituality is here.
Beautiful.
So I just want to leave everyone with that thought.
Excellent. Very powerful words to close on, Amoda. Great. Well, I just really wanted to take this opportunity to thank you wholeheartedly, Amoda, for sharing the past hour with us, and also for just to take a moment to acknowledge you for the phenomenal journey that you've been on. There is something quite remarkable of actually, rather than turning away from life, taking a deep breath and turning towards it, and very just to be in the presence of that energy and to have you on the call this evening has been really, really powerful for me personally, and I have total trust that it's actually been awakening and enlivening for everyone at home as well. So I just really wanted to say thanks for sharing this time with us.
And I thank you for that, Damien, and I also want to say that I have really appreciated the wonderful bowl that you have created for allowing this conversation to happen, and it's flowed beautifully, and it's felt intimate and honest, and I also feel that you provide a great service that comes from a very authentic place, and that really comes across in what you offer and how you hold this space. So I also acknowledge that, because you know, a telecall is always as good as the host, I find. So it's wonderful. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Cool. Thank you, Amoda. And this wouldn't be possible without the active participation from each and every one of you at home, wherever you are in the world. These conversations that we share week to week are a very important part of our own personal awakenings, and also this new frequency that Amoda was talking about that we're witnessing in the world. It is a really great opportunity for us to come together and just share the things that we're learning as we grow and develop. So I just wanted to acknowledge each and every one of you at home. Now, for those of you who would like to listen to this call again, it will be made available for free on the People You Should Meet website tomorrow. So please do come back and listen to it again. I certainly will be. Also, if you feel that this material would change the life, inspire a friend, a colleague, a loved one, please do take that small step forward to actually share this material freely with people. It's just through these small action steps that we take that we really can actually make a profound difference in the lives of others. So I do encourage you all to take that step forward if you feel moved to. Great, so that brings us to the end of another People You Should Meet call. Now, got the beautiful song Life is a Miracle, and I was just wondering if you wanted to just quickly give us a quick introduction to Amoda, and then we'll play the recording.
Okay, so this is Kavi Jezzy Hockaday playing and singing Life is a Miracle, based on the teaching in my book and his beautiful ambient guitar. Enjoy.
Good night, everyone.
When you see life is a miracle, you won't suffer anymore. When you know you are a miracle, you won't be alone. And the truth will set you be alright. And when you see yourself in everyone, you won't be alone. The heart is free, and you are a miracle, and we are not alone. The truth will set us free, and love will carry us home. The truth will set us free, and love will carry us home. Set us free, and love.